answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
Upon my inauguration, I will immediately terminate every open borders policy of the Biden administration. We'll get it done. And follow the Dwight D. Eisenhower model. So Eisenhower was very tough on the border. People don't see him as that, but he was. We'll carry out the largest domestic deportation operation in American history.
And that is going to make a lot of folks happy. The largest deportation action in history. Eisenhower moved 1.3 million. We're going to get into that in more detail in a moment. But that was Donald Trump speaking the other day in Iowa at a rally, obviously. And you know, the latest polls, a latest ABC, Washington Post poll, I think it was, shows he is 10 points ahead of Biden. 10 points. A week ago, they were still basically neck and neck, could go either way. As far as Trump against any of his primary opponents, they don't stand a chance. They're all eating his dust. Now, some of you may not like to hear that. You may have had enough of Trump and you think he's going to be more disruptive to the nation. But I want to remind you a couple things. Remember what you were paying for gas and food and how good jobs were when Trump was in office and jobs yet to come. The Keystone Pipeline, and we were energy independent, and our emergency supply of oil and gas was topped off at 750 million barrels, excuse me. We might only have 750 now after Biden's drawn down on it. Not once, but twice at least, for votes going in the midterm. Probably do it again going in Thanksgiving, so you'll feel like I'm getting a better price to travel at Thanksgiving. If we continue doing that, then we will not have any, quote, emergency reserve. And if the other countries decide, no, we're not going to sell it to you at all. Oh, I could hear now the electric car owner saying, oh, but I'll be good. Do you not know where electricity comes from? You better do some research before you start patting yourself on the back. Again, I thank you for listening. You guys are making this program one of the hottest programs going right now. That's not to take away from any others, and that's not my intent. I'm just telling you the success that we have, that Quentin and I get, and my sponsors are seeing, is because of you. And we thank you for it. And again, I encourage you as always, if you have a need one of my sponsors provides, please go to them first. And even if you don't have a need, just take time to call them and say, I want to thank you for supporting Larry Connors USA. Truly patriotic program. I ruffle some feathers on the right, as well as I do on the left. Try to give it to you straight. There are no sacred cows. So here we are in the second hour of September 25, 2023. If you missed the first hour, shame on you, as I always say, but I know many of you have other things to do, and I understand that. And, of course, when we're on the air live, I mean, we're broadcasting for you, we are actually also streaming at Larry Connors USA Facebook and Twitter, News Talk STL Facebook and Twitter, and on Rumble. And on almost any podcast location you go, you type in Larry Connors USA, you're going to hear a previous program. Now, Trump, who, as I said, certainly leads the 2024 Republican primary by a massive margin, delivered that speech in Iowa last Wednesday evening, and he blasted Biden for, and I'm quoting, nation-wrecking catastrophe on our southern border. And my friend, we haven't even begun to see the full effects. We see the crowds and the hordes coming across, undocumented, unvetted, carrying who knows what diseases, and who knows what their intent is. Maybe they really do just want to have a better life. I can understand that. Everybody wants that for themselves and their family. But when they come in and swarm into an area, even New Yorkers are now realizing it's not a good idea to be a sanctuary city. We can't take care of our own, much less all these other people coming in. And they have at the tops 60,000. They were getting, you know, a total around 10,000, but they'd ship them out, so they're holding it 10, and now too many more are coming in. They're going to the north. Governor Abbott's making sure they get there if they want to go there. They don't want a gun to them. Biden is reaching the consideration that he's going to do an executive order that says whatever state you cross into when you come into the U.S., you stay there. That's directly aimed at Texas. But then again, we don't really have a border, so who knows if they're really inside the U.S. or not. We might well now be northern Mexico, the lower third of our nation, and then the half, and then all of it. And you got Democrats led by President Biden, and they've got an excuse as always, and they know who to blame. They say, you know, you could have taken care of all this years ago. Well, so could they. When Obama was in office and he had power and control, and the Democrats power and control of both houses of Congress, they could have dealt with the immigration issue. They didn't. He wanted to put all of his cachet into Obamacare. And you can keep your doctor, right? Clinton could have done it as well. He didn't do it. So it's easy to pass the buck around that it wasn't dealt with. Part of it had to do with industry, wanting cheap labor to come in. Part of it having to do with others who just felt it's wrong to keep brown people from coming to the U.S. Now, there's nothing in our immigration law that says if you're a brown person, you can't come in. It's not written anywhere. But yet Biden, along with other Democrats, continue to blame Trump for the border chaos. Now, with that in mind, while they're blaming Trump, I want you to hear another viewpoint expressed by someone who obviously knows of what he's speaking. And that would be Steve Miller with America First.
Well, we know that Joe Biden is an inveterate liar, but even for him, this is a lie that is so mammoth, so preposterous, that I'm astonished that he would even say it. When Joe Biden came into office, we had in place, under President Trump, Title 42, Remain in Mexico, and Safe Third Country Agreements. Collectively, what it meant was anyone who crossed the border illegally was either sent to Mexico, a willing country, or their home country. Nobody was getting released into the United States. Catch and release was over, finished, done, a remnant of the past. He single-handedly and purposefully dismantled every single policy that we had in place at the border and in the interior, and implemented the catch and release scheme that has led to the largest tidal wave of illegal immigration in human history. They are now averaging 10,000 apprehensions a day, and on top of that, thousands more gotaways. Joe Biden has converted CBP and ICE into a resettlement operation. Their job is to find illegal immigrants and resettle them in all 50 American states.
That's right, all 50 states, and even in your home before it's over with. And who came up with an ID for illegals? the Biden administration and giving them court dates in year 25, 26 to come back and talk about if you're here legally or not. I mentioned, as Trump did, that Eisenhower deported 1.3 million. Many of them were braceros who had green cards to come into the country, but they overstayed their visit, so they were kicked back out. The California Congressman Issa gives you more details of the Eisenhower plan.
It was historic because this four or five star general made a decision, which was America needed to get control of its borders, and just trying to seal the border wasn't enough. You had to have a way to push people out, whether they overstayed bracero visas or were no longer needed or, quite frankly, just came in illegally. But since Eisenhower, not until Donald Trump, had anyone really said, we're going to not just seal the border best we can, but we're going to have a process to return people.
And they did. And do you know who was supporting the deportation? Labor unions, and Mexican communities in the states. They were saying, take them back, get them out. Last week, the underbelly of cowards in Washington was fully exposed with just one question that is still causing ripples.
Have you had personal contact with anyone at FBI headquarters about the Hunter Biden investigation?
I don't recollect the answer to that question, but the FBI works for the Justice Department. I'm sorry.
You don't recollect whether you've talked with anybody at FBI headquarters about an investigation of the president's son?
Okay. I don't believe that I did.
What were you thinking when he said he couldn't come up with the right words? He said, I can't recollect.
What was I thinking? Come on. Yeah. Mark's exactly right. I mean, no one trusts Merrick Garland, and by extension, they now no longer trust the Department of Justice. They see a two-tiered system of justice. They see this weaponized, politicized agency, and that's why 65% of Americans now don't have a favorable view of the Department of Justice itself. They have a negative view of it. That's a dangerous thing in a constitutional republic. We have to have the people's trust to keep our system going. And this, you know, attorney general, I think, has corrupted it. And then he comes before us with this smug attitude. He memorizes four talking points and repeats them over and over and over. That's why people are frustrated, Maria. That's why we're talking about this in the appropriations process, because he knows that we don't have the bandwidth to impeach him, even though he probably deserves it, because all the attention is now on the president himself. And so he just sits there, goes through the hearing, and pretends as though, you know, he's immune to all this.
Yeah, laughing, basically, laughing at you. He is. Now, you heard that was, again, Louisiana Congressman Mike Johnson. And you heard him mention how what Levin had to say about it. Let me let you hear just one little clip of Mark Levin's reaction.
The idea that the Attorney General of the United States watches television, sees a deal breakdown in front of a judge, doesn't say to the head of the criminal division or the public integrity division or his deputy attorney general or associate attorney general, I need to be briefed on this. The idea that he doesn't know what's taking place with Joe Biden, with Hunter Biden, with Donald Trump, he is a flat-out serial liar.
That's right to the point. Even if he says, as he claims, I promised the Senate I wouldn't be involved in it. I haven't done anything. You could still ask questions. You could say, where do we stand? Where is it going? You're not telling them what to do or not do. You're asking, and you're aware of it. This lack of ineptitude on a major case fits exactly with the FBI Comey, when he didn't sit in on the Hillary Clinton interview over her private servers. If I'm not there, I didn't have anything to do with it. You're the head of the FBI. Garland, you're the head of the DOJ. So again, back to this issue. There is an impeachment hearing that's going to start Thursday in 2 days. What can we expect?
Well, the chairman of oversight, Jamie Comer, my good friend, is going to lay out a refresher course for everyone of where we are, how far we've come, and what we found. We have credible allegations and now mounting evidence of very serious crimes on the part of the Biden family and then the connection to the president himself, bribery and pay-for-play schemes and all the rest. And we know under Article 2, Section 4 of the Constitution that, you know, bribery, by one example, is a listed cause for impeachment. The president shall be removed from office for such. So when credible allegations come forward with whistleblowers, email, text messages, you know, bank statements, all the evidence we have gathered up, we have no choice but to proceed to the inquiry phase to follow that truth where it leads. That's the job that we take under the Constitution and by our oath to finish the job, and we're going to do that.
They're going to do it. I certainly hope they do. But again, impeachment cannot be completed unless the Senate goes along with it. That's why this election is going to be so very important, not just on the presidential level. Yes, they will be out of office, but that doesn't prohibit charges of treason, things of that nature. And then, of course, you have all these bank accounts. Again, you were listening then to Congressman, Louisiana Congressman Mike Johnson, as to what we can expect. And he said, look what we've already got.
We have no choice but to proceed to the inquiry phase to follow that truth where it leads. That's the job that we take under the Constitution and by our oath to finish the job. And we're going to do that.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the GOP and Jim Jordan in particular and Jamie Comer have been talking about the president's bank records. Do you anticipate you will have access to President Biden's bank records? Will you be able to actually see whether or not money flowed into his account directly?
Well, that's the next step, and that's why we need the inquiry phase, because, as you know, it gives us advanced subpoena authority. But right now, they waive things off because under normal circumstances, as you know, the Congress only has the power to do an investigation for a legislative purpose. We're way beyond that now. We're not looking to pass a new law or strengthen a law. We're looking at outright corruption all the way to the top, to the White House itself. And so we need the advanced subpoena power to be able to obtain the remaining records that we need to connect the last couple of dots. I think it's there. Uh-huh. That's our a suspicion, and we'll find out. But that's what the inquiry phase is all about.
Good, good. So we'll see starting Thursday just how deep it's going to go. Oh, by the way, in case you missed it over the weekend, on his own Truth Social post, former President Trump wrote, if I'm elected in 2024, it will be, quote, thoroughly interesting. He said the Comcast, the parent company for NBC and MSNBC, quote, will be thoroughly scrutinized for their knowingly dishonest and corrupt corruption of people, things and events. It's one-sided, vicious, and they should be investigated for threatening treason. Oh, it's gonna get good. Coming up, OxyContin has been one drug that was going to be used for painkillers, and pretty soon it became a death of many and addictions. But there are similar drugs. Dr. Rick Layman for the U.S. Center for Sports Medicine will be joining us. Lock and load. Ready on the right. I want to share something special with you. I've told you how Wellington Environmental works to keep hospitals, schools, businesses safe for their patients, students, clients, employees. Wellington can do the same for you. Perfect example. A relative went to the basement, almost knocked over by the smell. A sewer line had broken. A call to Wellington, a crew was dispatched. First thing, make the home safe. Then clean up the mess. Truly clean it up. Now I'm telling you this because I want the best for you. Wellington Environmental. Here's the number, 314-644-4930. 644-4930. AAA rating with the Better Business Bureau, 644-4930, Wellington Environmental, your world, cleaner, better, safer. Be well with Wellington. If you like premium cigars and whiskey, I've got the perfect place. Lit Cigar Lounge, now open in its new space in the district, just off Highway 40 in Chesterfield. Lit Cigars for anyone who enjoys great cigars, whiskey, bourbon, tequila. Ladies, that includes you. Leather seating, numerous big screen TVs, special events featuring live music and tastings. More details at litstl.com. litstl.com. Lit Cigar Lounge in Chesterfield.
I said, brother, if you only knew, you'd wish that you were in my shoes. You just keep on using me until you use me up. Until you use me up.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Welcome back, my guest, in all transparency, is a good friend of 20-plus years and also personal surgeon physician for me for various surgeries, Dr. Rick Lehman of the U.S. Center for Sports Medicine. Glad to have you back on with us, sir.
Thank you, Larry. Good to be here.
So let's begin, first of all. Your work is dealing primarily, not all the time, but primarily with sports-related injuries. You dealt with numerous high-profile folks that you have named, and they've even named you as being their doctor, being with various pro teams or Olympic medalists. And at many times during that, you had to worry about how to help them get through some kind of pain to perform to their maximum.
Yes, sir.
And so what was the first option?
Well, you know, generally when we start for pain control, it's with an anti-inflammatory and maybe a non-narcotic medication, Tramadol, there's a number of them. And we've been very, very careful for lots of reasons. One is positive testing, just to be 100% transparent, in terms of any type of narcotic. So Oxycontins, et cetera, are a little bit off base. And everybody's heard the stories of athletes getting addicted to narcotics. So we're very, very careful about not trying to prescribe these oxycodone, oxycodone, hydrocodone medications.
And you, when you do give it, and I can speak of experience because I had two rotator cuff surgeries and sepsis set in on one, and you gave me, I think, maybe three pills and said, use as needed only?
Yes, sir. And I think that's the new mantra is you maybe give a handful. Say it's for breakthrough pain, you know, it's not what you need to take every 6 hours, which was the prior regimen, and then try to get by on lesser medications. Now, in Europe, you're not going to get any narcotics. And I've known a number of athletes that have surgery in Europe, and they say, look, they just tell them, we're not going to give you narcotics. Pain is normal after surgery, which is probably correct.
Are you saying it's correct not to give anything to alleviate the pain?
Well, in America, we don't do that. In America, we don't say pain is normal. We try to alleviate the pain the best we can.
Well, pharma companies make a lot of money on it. First of all, go ahead.
Well, that's right. And prior to, you know, this last rash of a complete change in the focus, the idea was eliminate all pain, athletes or patients or whoever, post-surgical pain medicine every 4 to 6 hours for as long as they need it. And we were told that it was non-addictive by Purdue and the companies, pharmaceutical companies. So that was the mantra. And then when we learned that this was all a bunch of hooey and that it was very addictive, you know, things have significantly changed. So in America, we're going to try to alleviate your pain. In Europe, they're going to tell you post-surgically, of course you're going to have pain, you know, suck it up. But we will give products for breakthrough pain and as needed, trying to limit the amount.
You know, there's a Netflix special on, and folks, if you have not seen it, it's called Painkiller, and it deals exactly with what Dr. Lehman was referring to, Purdue Pharma, that was owned by the Sackler family, and it was ruled that they would be protected from civil lawsuits linked to the opioid crisis because it was addictive. They knew it was, but they weren't telling anyone. Because the idea is if you need it, you're going to need more of it and then need more of it. So they got a $6 billion settlement filing for bankruptcy. And basically the attitude as expressed in the Netflix series is the owner says, no big deal. It'll be paid out over 10 years from the profits.
Well, there's no question. And you know, the Sackler family was complicit. They absolutely had data. They knew it was addictive. They told physicians it was not addictive. And it was called the sixth sense, pain, and you had to get rid of it. And really, this was promulgated mostly by the VA and the United States government. Give the veterans as much pain medicine as they need. It's not going to hurt them. Well, when we found out that that wasn't the case, and again, there are a lot of high-profile athletes that got addicted to drugs or got addicted to opioids out in the press, and we found out what ends up happening next. What ends up happening next is you can't get it from your doctor. You start taking heroin because it's fairly cheap, maybe fentanyl, and you know what happens? You die.
Yeah, because now too much of that fentanyl is laced into everything. Now, what about, we've talked about this before, now recreational marijuana is available. Generally, it had to be for treatment of as a medical, and apparently had some benefits on the medical side for glaucoma and also pain, correct?
Absolutely, and I think it's a great alternative. It's a safe alternative compared to certainly opioids. And I think medical marijuana is something that we should really be looking more towards as they do in Europe. You don't have to smoke it. You know, there's oral types, gummy bears, chocolate squares, et cetera. There's liquid. And I think that's a great alternative. Again, I don't think you should be doing it every 4 to 6 hours, but if you're having significant pain, that is a reasonable way to approach it.
Now, there is a distinction between what you're buying for recreational and medical.
So, you know, the medical is tightly regulated and very pure. There's not a lot of lacing of cocaine, meth, fentanyl, et cetera, which you can get in marijuana.
You think that's happening with these labs that are now authorized by various cities, communities, states?
Well, I think a lot of it, the medical is all tested. The recreational is not. So, yes, I think that medical marijuana needs to be tested and there needs to be controls on it. And I think that should be the same for recreation. I don't think you should be able to sell just anything you want.
So would the recreational do the same for you as the medical, or does the medical also make you high?
Well, the medical, if it depends on what you're smoking or eating. Yeah. So there is THC in it and it can make you high. But it's a much purer form, and generally, it's a much safer form. And the reason is the regulation, because if I grow marijuana, I put a bunch of stuff in it, and I sell it to Larry Connors, you don't know what you're getting.
That's true.
Where when you buy medical, you know.
All right, so trying to improve our health. If you're down, you're fatigued, a lot of people say, B12, get B12. What would be the allotted amount, and could that be overdone?
Certainly, I think a B12 injection usually we do it either once a week or every 2 weeks. And I think a standard B12 injection.
You're talking about an injection or pill, and then what milligram?
You can take it orally, and what you want to buy is a Super B complex. You can get it at Costco, Walmart, Sam's, anywhere. It comes in a pill. You take one every day. And then the B12 injections, which we do for our athletes, usually once a week or every other week. Generally, are CC, and they're very helpful, and it's a much higher dose. It also acts quicker than the oral. So if you're going to take the oral, you have to take it every day. And again, Super B complex has B12, B6, and all the rest of the B complex vitamins.
All right, let me switch gears again. I'd sent you a couple articles on one of your thoughts. The CDC is refusing to release updated information on post-COVID vaccination regarding heart inflammation. Why?
Well, I mean, I think there's a lot going on here. I mean, it's a complicated question in that I think they're greatly underreporting the incidence of myocarditis in post-injection COVID vaccines, number one. We're seeing it. You're seeing it in the press. Bronnie James, you can go through a whole list of people that have had it that have played out in the press. And I think it's a much bigger problem than the CDC wants to admit. So they basically said, we're not going to release the information. The information that they released is from September of 22, which is about a year ago. And what good is that doing anybody? You know, we've had significantly different vaccinations and significantly different COVID strains. So again, the CDC is playing cat and mouse here, which I really don't appreciate as a medical provider.
What about the Pfizer-funded study that shows poor effectiveness using COVID-19 for children?
Well, again, and you and I have talked about this. Why we're vaccinating kids at 12 and under? They're saying 6 months, 5 years. Is ridiculous. So if you're 12 and you get COVID, so what? And the risk is way outweighs the benefit. Number one. Number two, you don't get long haul myocarditis generally from the virus, and you can get it from the vaccine. So, and if you read the article you sent, and this article has been played out now over the last couple months, couple things are clear. If you get the disease, you have protection against long COVID. If you get the vaccine, you don't have any protection. In fact, your incidence of long COVID goes up. So why anybody would want to get vaccinated in 2023 is beyond me.
So are you recommending they don't? I mean, I always tell folks that it's you make your decision, but that beats being ordered to take it.
Well, I mean, as a doctor, people are paying for my decision. Or my information, or you know, my beliefs, and my beliefs are my athletes. Now, if I had somebody who had significant comorbidities, diabetes,
right,
on chemotherapeutic drugs, I would say, hey, go get the vaccine. You don't want to get COVID. But for my patient population, or for Larry Connors, I would tell you not to get vaccinated at this point. I think the initial vaccinations were reasonable. We didn't really understand what was going on.
Right.
We didn't have a good feel of the future. But today, with the recent results, and to keep getting vaccinated every 6 months, I can't buy it.
Well, and on your advice, I did get both shots. I got COVID. I got the booster. I got COVID. And I've had several times since. Now we got flu going around, an RSV issue, pneumonia. I mean, who's to say what's what?
I think that's exactly right. And I think right now COVID falls, in my opinion, into, you know, your typical virus, right? I mean, I think you have RSV, which is significant, and I think you have garden run-of-the-mill, virus, and people are going to get colds. And you know what? I don't know that there's a big difference at this time.
Well, it works in the world. The world's against the machines, but other than that, I don't know. Doc, as always, I appreciate it. Thank you, Rick. Dr. Lehman. Coming up again, the date that changed a lot of lives.
Allen Outdoor Solutions knows what you want. An oasis, a place at your home to relax, enjoy, entertain. Allen Outdoor Solutions can design and build your oasis. A spacious stone patio, different levels, maybe a fireplace, flowing water. See their quality work at AllenOutdoorSTL.com. AllenOutdoorSTL.com or call 314-647-4800. AllenOutdoorSTL.com. This is a scary time when it comes to your money, especially if buying a home. That's why you need Homestead Financial Mortgage. I know the owners, met the team. You can trust Homestead will be with you every step of the way. Call 24/7 with any question or concern. Homestead is on your schedule, not banker's hours. This is not just about buying a home. It's about trust. You can go to my website, larry.homesteadfinancial.com, larry.homesteadfinancial.com. This time of year, heavy rains, high winds, they can hit, and if you have any loose shingles, even the smallest hole in your roof, you're taking a major gamble with your biggest investment. I can tell you from personal experience, do not wait until you have water where it shouldn't be. Don't forget that John Beal has disaster crews, which can at least cover your roof until the damage can be fully repaired. Homeowner, business owner, call John Beal. 1-800-NEW-ROOF. 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
Well, I started out with $1 million. Gambled with a man and I won me another. Bought me a gun and I robbed my brother. I'm bad, but I don't care, boys. Gonna be a millionaire.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
She was crying at the border when President Trump was president. Remember that famous scene of her saying how terrible it was? You know, this is just a total, they don't want to talk about the tragedy at the southern border and how much the cartels are making, because they do, in fact, have operational control over our border. You've heard our Homeland Security Chair Mark Green talk about that. At, you know, we had committee meetings at the border on our side just so we would force the Democrats to go to the border. You cited our so-called border czar, Kamala Harris. She's only been to the border once. Joe Biden's barely been anywhere near the border ever in all his 50 years of as being a career politician.
Those are the words of New York Congresswoman Claudia Tenney, Reverend AOC and the like, who really can put on a drama case as to how badly those children were being treated, because Trump was separating them from someone who claimed to be a parent. But they wanted DNA testing to make sure they're really related, that they weren't bringing children in for child trafficking. That is not an out-of-line question to ask to protect a child. But with all the hubbub, they said, okay, we'll keep them together. We're just not going to let them go forward until we make a decision. So at least it was that. But then they were down there crying, look at the cages there. They're the cages. They were in the same ones that Obama had used. Same exact ones. And now, of course, as you heard earlier, we're back to catch and release into the interior of the country. They give them an ID card with their name and a picture on it. And they're that close to being able to register for a federal election. They can, in some sanctuary cities and states, participate in those local elections, but not a federal election. So far. I'm afraid that's becoming my echo on everything lately. But speaking about where we stand right now with illegals, and of course, they love to call them migrants. Well, yes, they are migrants. They are migrating from one country to another. Same thing as if a group of people decided to leave your city and go to a city 100 miles away. They are migrating to that city, maybe to live and have a family as opposed to where they are. But these are, make no mistake about it, illegal. Illegal is the first word. You may or may not call them alien. I don't really care. They are illegal. That's the key. And Tucson Sector Border Patrol agents now say they seized about 11,000 migrants, illegals, during the past week. That's according to the sector chief. Unofficial Border Patrol reports reveal the apprehension of nearly 40,000 so far this month. And we're not done. 40,000 this month coming through that one sector. And 11,000 just last week. They also say we made 500 rescues. Kids that were just thrown into the water, or who were drowning, or men drowning, or they got them across the border, then they left them to die of thirst. They have 100 federal criminal cases that are included in this. Now, what happens to that? Well, we'll see. They have detected and verified, at least to allegations, 15 human smuggling events. They may be children, they may be young boys, they may be young women, they may be toddlers. And they had 6 narcotics events. I want you to stop and think for a second. Out of these 11,000 that, quote, were apprehended, they're just being basically said, sit down over there until we go through you. They're not put in custody, really. They're not handcuffed. They're not behind bars. They just don't have enough. Just, you are now considered apprehended. Take a seat. And now that 11,000, they still had to go out in the water or somewhere and rescue 500 who were dying or near dying wherever they'd been left and abandoned. And out of the 11,000, they had 100 that they could identify as suspected federal criminal cases, be it illegal weapons or something else. Could be drugs and guns, which I'm coming to. 15 human smuggling events, 15 out of 11,000. Does that not sound to you like more are getting by than are being caught? And only 6 narcotic events. I'm not sure they don't allow some people just, let them be found up with narcotics. It'll take them time and effort to deal with them while we get others across. No, it's not looking good at all. So there's a debate that's coming up November 30th on Fox News. It will be narrated by Sean Hannity. Going to run 90 minutes. Not sure exactly where, but it's going to be in the state of Georgia. It will feature 2 that have agreed to participate. Oh, you want the names of the 2? Oh, I'm sorry. I guess I buried the lead. All those years of being a journalist, and I bury the lead. Well, let me jump forward. Neither is Trump. That's all what you wanted to know? We have Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, Republican, will participate in a televised debate in November, moderated by Fox News host Sean Hannity with hold your breath, California Governor Gavin Newsom. Well, they're going to be polar opposites. It would be similar to a dueling, but hopefully no one would die in it if they're not already dead when it comes to the polls. Hannity said, I'm looking forward to providing viewers with an informative debate about the everyday issues and governing philosophies that impact the lives of every American. And DeSantis is doing it, trying to break through the Republican primary field where he stalled out. Oh, and then here comes this. May I remind you, you're not allowed to be an election denier. If you're an election denier, you're anti-government, you want to overthrow the government, you're insurrectionist, you probably, if you weren't at January 6th, you wanted to be there on Capitol Hill. This statement begins by Jen Psaki, who was a White House press secretary. On her own MSNBC show, Inside with Jen Psaki. Should I change the name to this to Inside with Larry Connors? Nah, let her have it. She begins by stating and referring to Putin. Putin, he has indeed interfered in our elections in the past. And she's asking the person she's interviewing, do you fear that is something that could be happening for 2024? The person being interviewed said, I don't think, despite all the deniers, that he interfered in our election or that he's interfered in many ways in the internal affairs of other countries, funding political parties, funding political candidates, buying off government officials in government places. She's talking about Putin, and the she is Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton still claiming Russia could allegedly interfere in 2024 as they did before. Well, now, wait. If we're going to deal with facts, may we do that for a moment. Special Counsel John Durham's final report exonerated Trump of any Russian collusion. Do you get it? It's done. You disagree with it? Fine. But it is done. You can't have double jeopardy, although there wasn't a true trial. And he also stated the FBI launched a politically motivated witch hunt against Trump, using the flimsiest of pretexts to swiftly launch an investigation into him, while ignoring the Clinton's campaign plan to accuse Trump of colluding with Russia to distract from her private email servers issue. And yet Hillary has the, should I say this? Let me think this over. Should I say Hillary has the, I want to change one letter. Let you figure it out. Hillary has the gall to say, she's got the gall to say Putin did it then, and he'll do it again. So the Durham report, just rip it up, burn it, throw it in with her email she didn't turn over. Right? Oh, Jesus. All right, I want to go back to a time in history that had young men in particular and their families on the edge of their seats as something was happening on TV.
The Draft Lottery, a live report on tonight's picking of the birthdays for the draft.
And now a page from our Sunday Morning Almanac, December 1st, 1969. 50 years ago today, the night of America's first military draft lottery since 1942. With the war in Vietnam as a backdrop and the futures of some 850,000 young men on the line, the lottery featured a bin containing 366 capsules, one for each possible birthday. The order in which their birthdays were drawn from that bin would determine the order in which those young men would be drafted. First chosen, first to serve.
First chosen, first to serve. Well, then there came questions that, you know, maybe it wasn't done properly. But at the time, we didn't have a lot of ability to Google and do, in fact, you couldn't do any of that. And they were telling us that it was done properly. So let's go to the actual first drawing and the first numbers pulled.
Congressman Alexander Perney of New York drew the first number.
September 14th.
Capsule by capsule, date by date, the board filled up.
December 6th.
Finally concluding with June 8th as number 366.
Now, if you had 366, you were not likely to be drafted. My birth date is May 31, and I was a draft age. And you do know that even though we don't have the lottery and the draft at this point, when you turn 18, you still are supposed to report to the Selective Service and register with them, men and women now. I don't know if many do or don't. I don't know if they're going to try to look you up and penalize you or not. But I was given the impression that my birth date was going to be in the top 110. So I was very likely going to be drafted. So I made the decision that rather than be pulled into some place I didn't want to go, that's when I decided to join the Marines. I told my dad that I had. I thought he'd be proud of me. And he said, well, I'm not going to sign for you. You can go in the Army, the Navy, Air Force, but I won't sign for you. Go in the Marines. And I remember looking at him and saying, well, Dad, I don't need you to sign. I'm old enough to do it. I turned 18. I didn't actually go in until just before my 19th. In fact, I was in boot camp when the Sharon Tate murders took place. I remember seeing it on the board out in front of the mess hall. And it also turned out my lottery number, there was a mistake. It was a typo. The 100 number was for May 30. May 31 was down in the 300s. But I still don't regret doing it and thinking I'm going to do my best to serve my country. But then came questions, was the lottery fixed?
Statisticians soon cried foul, arguing that birth dates near the end of the year had inadvertently been clustered toward the top of the bin, making them more likely to be drawn first.
January 31st, February 16th, March 8th.
Fair or not, as events played out, only men with birthdays numbered 1 through 195 were ultimately called to duty. Men with the remaining 171 birthdays were home free. America ended the military draft in 1973 and has relied on voluntary enlistment ever since. But for many of the thousands who watched the drawing with bated breath, memories of that draft lottery telecast remain as vivid as ever.
Yeah, because their families and those young men thought, if my number's called, am I going to suddenly be in the jungles of Vietnam tomorrow? And if I am, will I be coming back? Not many were signing up to do that. And even during the World War II, the sign-up, the volunteer rate, was not as high as you might have expected. Thank God we don't have it, and hopefully we'll not need it. Remember our pledge, one nation under God.